Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Squawker Talker podcast. Today we'll be talking about the standout stats from another brilliant weekend of European football and also scouting at why La Liga might be the most exciting league to watch right now. And joining me on that journey is chief writer at Squawker, Mohamed Butt. How are you, Mo?
La Liga is always the most exciting league to watch, my man, but I'm upset right now, man. I'm wounded in my soul. No Messi for a month.
Because of a fractured arm.
It's going to be a bleak month.
We'll be talking about Lionel Messi, and someone that will also be talking about Lionel Messi is chief editor at Squawker, Will Hall.
If I can get a word in on that.
Yeah.
When it comes to that section.
We might be struggling, but floods of emails to get you back on, Will, so we got rid of Ollie and you're here now.
Very happy to be back. That's not true.
It could be.
Hashtag bring Will back.
Exactly. And I think if we're starting off with the standout stats of the week, we're going to talk about quite a small number, but 5 is the number of points clear Man City were at this stage last season. Whereas this season, they're level with second place Liverpool. De Bruyne is back, Man City are scoring loads of goals, but Liverpool are churning out the wins. Is this an exciting title race we've got this season rather than someone just storming to victory?
It is, yeah. It's, yeah.
Next standout stat.
it's crazy to think how Manchester United were the team pushing them close last season. I think so it was only 2 points dropped, would that be, that Man City had dropped by this stage last season?
Yeah, so they'd won 7 and drawn 1.
So that was absolute domination. And I think the number is obviously quite small, as you pointed out, at 5, but the manner in which City were playing at that stage and the fact that they've only dropped 2 points made that number seem a whole lot bigger, made that gap seem a whole lot bigger. Whereas this time out, it's like you say, Liverpool are keeping pace despite not playing quite so well as they did towards the tail end of last season. And you've obviously got Chelsea, who have made an unexpected start to things under Sarri with Eden Hazard, currently the best player in the league. And then you've got Spurs making their best ever start to a Premier League season.
Which
we can actually say with all confidence this time. And then Arsenal, if they win tonight, go joint third. So it's
fun.
Yeah, exciting. And we're nearly at the 10-game mark. And they always do say, like, you shouldn't really be looking at the league table until 10 games in. And there's one more game until we can say we're well into the season.
I think it's interesting because I think, if anything, City are more impressive now than they were last year, because last year they won a lot of games last minute. They were clearly still settling into Guardiola's full rhythm, whereas this year they've looked so comfortable. They lost their best player and they've just carried on basically as normal. They played Liverpool and didn't get richly humiliated, which obviously is a big thing for them. Considering what happened the last 3 games. That's basically their hardest game of the season, right? It's funny because the title race right now is, quote unquote, title race, is one team playing really well, two teams not playing well but winning anyway. And you wonder how that's going to factor into the second half of the season. At some point, you have to figure that not playing well, Chelsea and Liverpool start to drop points. But then at the same time, what if they just start playing well? Will they just keep racking up the points? With Chelsea, I think it's almost certain they're going to start racking up more points in terms of better performances. But the law of averages, you have to figure they're going to start dropping some points at some point. They were very lucky to get the draw at the weekend. At some point they're going to fail. Liverpool is really interesting to me because honestly right now it looks like fatigue is their biggest issue, and it's October, so that's not really a good sign. But then at the same time, once you get Fabinho and Naby Keita bedded in, that's going to be so transformative for that midfield. I don't think really we're ready for what a Liverpool team with a genuine defensive midfielder and a real borderline world-class central midfielder are going to look like, because I think that could be in the same way that Salah kicking on last season turned Liverpool into they're a good team to, and oh my god, they're amazing. I think once Keita and Fabinho get settled, it could do the same thing, but you have to figure at some point both of those teams either have to start playing well or they're going to start dropping points, whereas City are just
Liverpool are 10 points better off than they were last season, so they've actually got that platform for if they do start playing well, then they've already got the base for that to reflect better in the table, because they got to the Champions League final last season, but they came fourth. So it didn't actually look like a great season.
So last season, their big problem during the opening stage was the amount of games they were drawing. And despite the fact that it's very obvious what's missing with Liverpool right now is the attack's not quite gelling to the extent that was the case last season. They've actually scored more goals this season by, I think, two than was the case in the previous year. And I think, yeah, Mohamed referred to the fact that fatigue seems the problem. It does seem like a lot of the people analysing the situation are split on what they actually think is the issue there. Fatigue, yeah, might be one thing. I'm not that convinced that fatigue should be necessarily an issue so early on in the season. I think, that, yeah, maybe you could make the case that coming back off the international break, I know Jurgen Klopp certainly did refer to this a lot in his post-match press conference, that jet lag was an issue. So, yeah, it might be an issue in that Huddersfield game, and it probably was an issue during what was a very difficult run of fixtures before. But there's a lot of people arguing that it's a sort of concerted effort to conserve energy that is actually happening. They're pressing much less. Other people say that the departure of Zico Buvac is an issue and is sort of had an impact on their playing style. Maybe they've stepped away from the sort of high octane press.
Well, Klopp's lost his brain and he doesn't know what to do.
Lost the brain, yeah. I hope I got his first name right as well. Then, I remember telling myself I should check and then didn't.
Rookie.
Yeah. So I kind of subscribe to the second issue, that it's maybe a case of Klopp having looked at what has derailed their season in previous campaigns, and it's the festive fixture run and the fatigue that sets in during that period.
And that's what Mo's brought up before, saying that the reason they're not title challengers is because they lose their energy. So exactly. If they're now not exerting as much but not looking as good, then it means in the later part we might see more.
So what's happened there is Klopp's clearly listened to the sports talk and he's decided, well, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to
thanks, Jürgen,
tell them to just calm down, cool it.
Yeah. I also think it's Joe Gomez and Van Dijk putting the whole team on their massive gargantuan shoulders.
Yeah, the clean sheet record is seriously impressive. I think you have to go back to February for the last time they conceded a league goal, which was against West Ham. I think I'm right in saying that.
At home, is that?
At home, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah.
Anfield, yeah. That was the really, really important element of that stat. The thing I would say is that there was one moment in that Huddersfield game where the sort of it seemed like the mask might have slipped, and there was a really ugly moment of like Van Dijk and Lovren sort of getting their wires crossed as a cross came into the box. Lovren tried to do a scorpion kick type thing.
Classic.
There was also a jittery moment from Van Dijk earlier on in the game. And the point that I'm coming to here is that it's been the case for a while that Joe Gomez has been the best player in Liverpool's defence, and therefore you'd have to say by extension probably the best player in Liverpool's team, because the attack has not been quite gelling in the same way that was the case last season. And it was good to see Alan Shearer on the match today pick out his contributions to the Salah goal, because it was his pass.
Yeah, that pass was brilliant.
Yeah. Which a lot of people obviously picked up on after the game as well, so it was good to see that got pointed out. Because for all the praise we heap on Alexander-Arnold for his expansive style of play, Joe Gomez also has clearly got a high quality passing range and is prone to less mistakes, because the reason Alexander-Arnold's not in the team right now is because he's giving the ball away a few too many times than is optimum.
I think the fact that it is Joe Gomez has now come in for Alexander Arnold, I think it shows what Will was saying, that Klopp knows the defence is the strength of the side right now, and let's secure that more so we can sort of like...
When was the last time that was said about Liverpool?
I mean, Van Dijk was, 75 million quid well spent at this point. You know, you're looking at it, you're thinking, yeah, it makes sense. That's what you'd pay for one of the best defenders in the world, one of the players who can stabilise the back line, and he has. And Joe Gomez is huge, though. I think I think he's underrated at this point. I think everyone's sort of realised how good he actually is. But he's been more consistent than everyone in that defence so far this season. The only bad thing about him is that he's got number 12 on his back. Like, give that man a proper number. What's number? Who's got number 5? Ronaldo.
Giroud used to wear number 12.
Well,
and look at him, World Cup winner.
Yes. So. Well, there you go. He won the World Cup wearing number 9.
I know.
That's the thing. Joe Gomez.
The platform was set based on his.
Joe Gomez is great. Basically, is what I'm trying to say. And I think
Garth Crooks agrees, because I think he's been like an ever present in his team of the week.
He compared him to Bobby Moore.
Bobby Moore.
He got compared to Bobby Moore, who is arguably England's.
I think we should all learn from Phil Jones in that you should not compare promising young English defenders to great players, because it ends up horribly.
With Phil Jones, he'd been playing for Blackburn and then had sort of struggled after his big move, whereas Joe Gomez had been bought.
To be fair,
waiting, and now
Phil Jones was being played in the field.
In the first few games for Phil Jones at Man United, he looked like this marauding. He did look like Beckham, but I was like, oh my god, he's playing in defence, but he's also coming forward, and then literally that just completely fell apart. But anyway, let's not get on the Phil Jones.
I think that's fine to leave it there, leaving that sort of title race there.
I think Man City are word.
If Riyad Mahrez was taking penalties from 35 yards out, then he would have been all right.
Exactly. The fact that he was able to endure probably a couple of difficult weeks of reflection after missing that penalty to deliver probably man of the match performance.
David Silva was very good.
And David Silva also, Bernardo Silva scores again, I think.
Yep.
I mean, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many goals he's on, but he's the man who's basically replaced De Bruyne and is sort of added goal threat.
And now they've got De Bruyne back.
The depth is crazy. I don't think Guardiola's strong consecutive matching lineups back to back this season at all.
He doesn't need to, does he? It's embarrassment of riches.
Which is a testament to the squad depth. Yeah. But also, I mean, there's lots of other super teams that have squad depth, and they don't do that. It's usually like you need a consistent starting 11.
This is a testament to what Guardiola does and what Guardiola's unique genius. Other managers do it as well, but what his genius is that it's the system. So now that he's got it established, it doesn't matter that he changes his lineup every game, because the players that he brings in, everyone knows how to play in the system, and everyone knows, okay, if I'm playing here, then I play this role this way. I'm playing here, I'll play this role this way. So now it's like, not that the players aren't interchangeable, because they're not. They're very much, their unique talents are what makes the system what it is, but they all know how to play the system. So the idea before of consistency of selection was because your players knew how to play. Like, you didn't have an overarching theme. Like, you had to play these players to play a certain way. Like, so...
But Guardiola still does that.
No, he does.
Mendy is the top assist provider now in the Premier League, and he didn't play a couple of games.
And then it switched. There've been like behavioural issues as well with Mendy, because I know that he turned up late after going off the Joshua fight or something. Mm. And Guardiola didn't make a big deal out of it in the press, but I did read reports that he had actually gave him a bit of a ticking off.
Yeah,
but I think this is the thing with Man City: the fact that they can rotate so often, it allows them to really reinforce the mantra that no player is bigger than the club, and it serves them so well in issues like being able to sort of drop Mendy and not miss him. There was obviously the Sterling contract dispute going on at the moment. He apparently wants £200,000
deserves
a week.
It
You might say deserves it, but also if Man City don't think he deserves it's not like he's got a particularly strong hand to play, because that Guardiola's just going to bring Leroy Sané in. He's got like three other systems he could switch. He could play two up top with Jesus.
Spread of talent over the whole squad. It's this thing he's been working towards. Because at Barcelona, he had a very clear, obviously, first 11, because the players he had were so like phenomenal. But he clearly wanted to make it more. He did change a lot, and he'd always change things here and there. He'd be like, "Why are you doing this?" And it was obviously, firstly, it was to keep the whole squad involved. Secondly, it was to try and avoid fatigue, because fatigue is a very big factor. At Bayern Munich, it was even more evident that he would always rotate. He'd always change things. I mean, obviously at Bayern, you've got big egos, so you can't rotate. You have to keep everyone involved, but. You know, he would always like, Müller was right wing, then Müller was left wing, then Müller was on the bench, then Müller was central midfield, and then Robin was playing, then Robin wasn't playing, and it was a very sensible use. And at that point, though, you're looking thinking, oh, he's managing a veteran squad, because Ribéry was old, Robin was old, and it's like, oh, okay. And now it's come to City, and now he's got a young squad, and he's still doing it because, like Will says, no player's bigger than the club. It helps quell egos, which, I mean, City don't really have that many. They've only really got two, and that's Kompany and Aguero. And Aguero seems to have bought in, and he was the only real going to be. Kompany has an ego, but it's a team focused ego.
I was going
anyway.
To say, I don't like.
It's he's very clearly
he's
Mr. Captain, but it's like there's clearly an ego there, but it's team focused, so that's fine. But Aguero was always thinking. I always thought it'd be a problem with Guardiola, because Aguero famously pre-Pep. Like, did not like training, didn't pay attention to tactical instruction, and was lazy. And he's immense credit to him, because he's really worked at it, and he's now a fully functioning player in Guardiola's system. And I think the fact that they don't have any egos, although let's see how De Bruyne handles not immediately walking back into the team. That's good.
I think
they probably do have a few players with ego. It's just the egos don't rear their heads publicly, because no player's got like enough. enough of a hand to play to do that.
That's what I'm saying.
And just to wrap up on this, I think if you look at the demise of previous champions in recent seasons, such as Chelsea, it's always like dressing room issues, obviously in reaction to poor results, but dressing room issues like result in the in like the managers being sacked and teams not retaining the title, such as what happened at Chelsea under Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte.
That's why that
for me is like the biggest sort of the biggest strength Man City have to fall back on if they do want to become a team that sort of dominates the Premier League season upon season by winning the title in a way that's not been done since Manchester United, since Sir Alex Ferguson retired.
And he was a very strong manager.
Huge exponent of the
it's like, no player's bigger than the club. Yeah. And the last time someone other than the only time someone other than Fergie retained the title was Mourinho at the height of his powers in 2004, 2005, 2006.
Well, so what a perfect segue to talking about someone that is considered not to be at the height of his powers at the moment. And it seems the players that have dragged him down to that level in Anthony Martial, Juan Mata, Luke Shaw, players that have he's publicly addressed before, they're now, are they now saving his bacon, or does he deserve credit for that tough love?
No. They're absolutely saving his bacon. And it's. I mean, maybe you could argue with Shaw.
But he played Martial at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
He started him.
Yeah.
People have criticised Mourinho before because that formation could have well been Herrera didn't start.
It was a 4-3-3. Like Fellaini up front.
He played him, and credit to him, he played a very good player. That's not what's the stat? Martial has more goals under Mourinho than anyone else.
Well, he's joint direct involvement. Yeah. Martial, Lukaku, who's obviously had a season less than everyone else. And Paul Pogba.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, so he's
all 40.
So I'll play this very good footballer. And with Luke Shaw, I think you can, because with the benefit of Luke Shaw's quotes, he said, look, I spoke to Mourinho, what Mourinho said to me, it finally started to sink in. So as much as Mourinho was very cruel to Luke Shaw, you have to say that, okay, with Luke Shaw, you have to give him credit and say, yeah, maybe that's partly on you, mate, well done. But with Martial, with Mata, they were this exact same player when he took over. He's done nothing but just get in their way. The fact that he's now actually playing them, and he's only playing Mata because Jesse Lingard was injured, and he played Martial, fair play to him. But if Alexis Sanchez wasn't in such stupendously bad form, Alexis Sanchez would have played that game on the left in the exact role that Martial was playing. Remember, Alexis Sanchez came in and played terribly for half a season, but he benched Martial, put him right out the side. And now finally, because even in the new season, Alexis has not got it together, he's finally said, okay, I've got to play Martial because you're just not playing well. And he deserves credit insofar as he picked his best play. He's picked a very good team, and then he put good players out on the pitch. And but he doesn't deserve credit for Martial playing this way, because Martial's been playing this way the whole goddamn time. Same with Juan Mata. Juan Mata is this sort of weird enigma of a player. He's not the fastest, not the strongest, he's not even the most skillful, but he just makes everyone better around him. He's a quintessential support player. And in a lot of roles United have played him in, it just doesn't work with him playing that role. But if you play him as a 10 with fast players either side, and this is the key difference that he had at the Bridge, hasn't really had other times, fast players around him that move around a lot, he makes things happen. And I don't think there's any way you credit Mourinho for that performance, particularly because, again, they went behind. And yeah,
you said earlier Chelsea were lucky to have got a draw out of that. So yeah, they did something, right?
Yeah, but that's in the sense that Mourinho even helped them get a draw, because who did he take off in the second half? Martial, Rashford, took off the pace on the break, and he left on Lukaku, who was playing terribly. And I don't understand why he's playing terribly, because apart from the opening game of the season when he came back from the World Cup like a week earlier and played 23 minutes off the bench, he's played 90 minutes every single game this season. He's got to be
happened last season. They don't have a striker.
Yeah, he looks exhausted. This is the thing, they do have a striker. They've got Martial can play up there, Rashford can play up there. Or, hey, here's an idea, Alexis Sanchez, his best run in playing in English football has been when he played up front for Arsenal. Put Alexis Sanchez up there. That's a good way to get him off the flanks, which is where he doesn't play well, and get him involved in all the attack. You know, that might work. His best run for United has been in pre-season, playing up front with Juan Mata in a 3-5-2. You're playing 4-4-1-1, essentially. Juan Mata's your number 10. Why don't you put Alexis Sanchez up front? They've shown in pre-season they can work together. Do that. And give Romelu Lukaku a rest. The poor guy looks exhausted. But, you know, he kept Lukaku on. He took Martial off. And there were two or three occasions when Martial and Lukaku were breaking. Alexis Sanchez and Lukaku were breaking in the second half. And you're thinking, okay, if that's Martial and Lukaku, there's probably a goal in that. But look, but Alexis was so all over the place, and Lukaku looked exhausted. There was just the brakes fell down.
The stuff that I was deeming from that game was that Lukaku started badly, but then actually did. He got better in that game as it went on.
Yeah, but
his hold-up play got better, and it was a poor start. Him and Morata were
no, they were both shocked.
Were they both poor.
They were both shocking
at the role they were asked to play.
Yeah, no, neither of them. I mean, neither of them are Olivier Giroud, and they were both sort of asked to play the Olivier Giroud role, which is like, you know, I don't know why Sarri didn't just start Giroud, but I mean,
break, I think having it.
Yeah, maybe that was a factor. Yeah, because I mean, Morata didn't play as much as Giroud, but anyway, the point is. Mourinho doesn't deserve that much credit. He deserves a little bit of credit in so much as he picked the right starting 11, by and large, you know. And I thought,
did he deserve Sarri's assistant fist pumping him while he was sitting down and then being told to F off by the Chelsea fans?
It's funny when Mourinho gets Mourinho'd. I mean, it would quote unquote deserve. He is their best ever manager. He did win them three titles, so maybe you could argue
respect,
give him some more, you know, RESPCT. But at the same time, it's always funny when Mourinho gets his own treatment dished back in his face, isn't it? So, you know, having a Chelsea assistant coach just like proper Rui Farrier it right in his face was pretty good.
It was that is the least sporting thing.
Yeah, it was twice. It was like he did a lap, didn't he?
He went past,
then thought, oh, I've not gotten a reaction there.
Yeah.
And then
it was the subtle, I'll look at you, one-handed fist pump as I charge down the touchline towards the players. And then on the way back, I'm going to look straight at you and double fist pump in your face.
I'd be interested to see if there was ever any sort of... because there must have been a reason he did that.
He was just, that was the latest goal Man United conceded.
I know, but he's clearly gone out of his way to antagonise Mourinho. So it'd be interesting to see whether there was a moment previously in the game where, like...
Yeah.
In these games, there's always a little bit...
Celebrate one of the goals, apparently, like, not in front of them, but...
I'd imagine it would be something like that.
I think
that.
It was just basically like, remember when you celebrated when you went 2-1 up?
I would have thought, given the way that Sarri vehemently and, you know, without reservation, apologised for the attitude on public and then made him... If you took him like a little boy, apologised to this man, you know, I would imagine it was completely unprovoked.
Mourinho's tone, like, post-match interview is very much of an appeased... king. He's apologized, so I will leave it there.
He felt very, and you know what I mean, and sadly, you know, obviously he wasn't talking to a woman, so he felt very very magnanimous and kind of generous. So you know, it was a classy interview from him in that regard, and he was like, look, I'm sorry it was out of order, and I mean and that was a nice touch. And I think it was so weird seeing Mourinho just like, yes, no, he apologized. It's okay. He apologized. He was just...
Also, when stewards get involved and when it's in like a tight space, it always looks so much worse. Because he was going over to him, but what was... it's unlikely that he's going to go over...
He's poked people in the eye before Mourinho.
That's,
so
right.
Might have had Firmino Martial.
Honestly,
I think like seeing the guy, big guy in a high-vis jacket, like pinning him to a wall. Because it's quite cramped in that tunnel entrance as well. I mean, it just looks so much worse than it necessarily.
And you don't want to be... You know, you don't want to be honest with that Mourinho. He knew what he was doing, but look, his team just conceded a last-minute equaliser.
Mourinho,
have the patience of a saint to be able to take that on the chin and not react.
Exactly, and I think Mourinho again was right. The question he was asked is like, so why did you react that way? And he was like, no. It's not me.
Yeah,
it's not
exactly.
me reaction. You should be. You should be. Which is fair, because
I do think as well that a bigger deal we've made out of this if everyone didn't have like Mourinho fatigue, because it is every single week.
Yeah,
there is an incident.
I wish more managers. I don't know if you guys watch the NBA, but you know, in the NBA, Chris Paul and Rejon Rondo had a fight, and it's just like I just wish there was more of that kind of stuff in football, man. Just like absolute
more physical violence.
Just players get when players give it like the big one, and like, you're not going to actually fight. Just stop it. Either do it or just don't do it. Like if you're going to be aggro with each other, then actually just fight like in the NBA, or just don't bother, because everyone knows like when they're scratching.
It's a bit like hold me back.
It's like you're not going to, you know, Jack Wilshere does it all the time. Like, you're not going to actually swing on someone, Jack. Just sit down, man. No one cares.
We need a legal disclaimer here saying the Squawker Talk does not condone physical violence.
I'm not encouraging physical violence. I don't think it's a good... But I'm just saying, you know, subjectively,
so,
in my own opinion...
It's all right. We'll
beyond the violence, before I start swinging at Mo, Mourinho said they dominated the game, they controlled the game. He's never seen Jorginho play so weak, was the quote. Was it? Did Man United deserve to win, to draw? Were Chelsea in control? What's like the final verdict on that game, that result?
Yeah, I think Sarri kind of summed it up quite nicely and said they didn't really play to their strengths. They were hoofing it a bit, which has not been the case for Chelsea over the course of the season so far. And Man United were the aggressors for about a 30-minute spell in the second half. On balance, I'd say a draw is fair. Because their chances weren't... all four goals seemed to be kind of poor defending. Like Marcos Alonso lying on the floor clutching his... Because, I mean, you've always got to be cautious when criticising players for going down and staying down because it might be a head injury and that's a really serious issue. But if you watch it, I think Lukaku just pushed him in the back slightly and it's unclear what Marcus Alonso is actually appealing for, really, if he stays on the floor. That's bad defending.
I think players I've gone down.
The late goal they conceded, Pogba, Shaw and Lindelof were just statuesque, like ball watching, basically. The Rudiger goal as well was poor.
Pogba, yeah.
And then the Martial goal was kind of, I think he hits it through about two Chelsea defenders and they were kind of caught flat-footed.
I find it hard to blame anyone for that second Chelsea goal purely because David Luiz's header was so almost one of the best goals of the season.
But also, David De Gea makes one of the best saves of the season from the follow-up Rudiger, I think.
Yeah.
And then...
No one gets there. No, I know what you mean. I just wanted to...
If it was Granit Xhaka standing there, there would have been a montage of it.
I just wanted to shout out that header, that's all, because I just love that header. Just like...
Yeah, so...
Proper like leap, just bulleted it. It was beautiful.
To wrap up there, I'm not just digging these players out for no reason, but what the point I would make is that both teams kind of got what they deserved by switching off.
The one player that also came away with a new sort of scalp, Ashley Young, locked down again. The most informed winger in the league.
This is what I was going to say, is Ashley Young, basically United...
He
did what he did against Mohamed Salah. He kicked him around a lot, used his savvy, when the ref wasn't looking, knocked him around, pushed him around, got very tight to him, didn't let him turn him at all, get any sort of room to accelerate, and it worked. And Ashley Young, the fact that Ashley Young has now become the de facto Gentile, you know, the guy you want to man, who you want to man, what your brilliant player, Ashley Young in there. Yeah. That's weird, but it's he was very good. He shut him down. Hazard was very quiet, which is not really what you want to see. Jorginho was you know, they hounded him well. They pounded him well, and it's interesting. This is the thing, like Sadi says, you know, they didn't. The biggest test of teams like Sadi, of teams like Guardiola's passing systems, things like that, is how do you respond under pressure? What separated Pep's Guardiola, Pep's Bayern Munich, and now his Man City from other teams that try and play that kind of football is when they're pressed, they carry on doing what they're doing. They carry on playing their way. You can't intimidate them into losing their form.
And I do think Hazard was very good, by the way. He was the most fouled player
on the pitch.
He created six chances as well, I believe.
Yeah, no, he never stopped going, but it was like what he's been doing so far this season to keep him quiet that level was impressive. But I'm not saying that Sadi's Chelsea are like failures or something. But I'm just saying you can tell they're early in their process.
Yeah, because that's what I was going
to
say.
I'm not sure he was quite dealt with, and to the same extent that Herrera dealt with him in the last Man United game. Like, it wasn't
not locked down as much. But Ashley Young has been asked to play against two of the most informed players in consecutive seasons, and they've not got on the score sheet or had an assist.
Right? Yeah.
Like
he was the only person to shut down Mohamed Salah last year without critically injuring him. So you know, I feel like you have to. Give old Youngie a bit.
But you are always saying like players should be protected more.
I would always argue in favour of Eden Hazard. Like, referee should have been more quick with the yellow cards to ward Young off in terms objectively. Yeah, I'm just saying subjectively, like what he did was impressive. Like defensively, he used his intelligence. He used the fact the referee wasn't going to give him a yellow card for every foul he made to make a whole bunch of fouls. That's the funny thing about man marking. Herrera did it, of course. He does it against Hazard all the time. It's if you foul every single time, the referee's not going to give you a yellow card every time, is
because
he?
The other thing with the Herrera, wasn't there an incident shortly after that game where he fouled him twice and got sent off straight away?
That was the previous one.
This is one of the underpinning themes of the season as well, especially with Wilfried Zaha's comments a few weeks ago
we spoke about it before.
I think referees are going to be called to sort of decide on whether they actually want to protect sort of the more flair players a bit more extensively, or I don't think anything will come of it because we've had
it happens every, like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, except Eric Dyche's tackle as well. Everyone, Sean Dyche saying that tackling's better than stats.
He just got 5-0. Don't get drunk on stats.
Sean Dyche showing
everyone.
They literally
repeated the same stats and proved that 9 times out of 10 you're going to get spanked.
Sean Dyche just showing everyone who he truly is. It's just like,
it's weird how it's like a lot of the things he was saying when Burnley were having such a good time of things seemed quite even-handed and fair, and I mean, yeah, actually a valid voice in a game which is for certain opinions are becoming a little bit old hat and old fashioned, and managers being dug out for being a bit, you know, a bit Brexit. but now when things aren't going their way, he just the tone is just completely, it wasn't a nice thing.
It's like, well, we'll talk about Sean Dyche another time. The thing I want to just clarify about Ashley Young is the point I'm trying to make is that he seems like he's now Mourinho's man, where it's like rubs his shoulders, right, you ready, Hazard up next,
and his general, Carvalho.
And to an extent Hazard did play well, but he also didn't play as well or didn't have the same impact he's been having. So
plus, I mean,
that was the sort of thing. But we'll stop on that Ashley Young because we've got other stuff to talk on.
Well, actually, to be fair, we'll just want to shout out, come back when you won the Prem is still my favourite insult to a Tottenham player.
Well, that characterises what role he's now playing, isn't it? Sort of wind up merchant against the most informed players. But in terms of protecting, someone that might need protecting soon is Fulham manager, Slavisa Jovanovic. And we've had relentless listeners' questions and talks about from Neil Rorty about him being sacked and the odds on him being sacked. And they were quite short recently, and they've been made shorter because they've conceded more goals than any team in Europe's top five leagues this season.
I'm going to come to his defence, even though like he needs someone to come to his defence. Good God.
Brilliant. What a brilliant defence.
You've made
Mohamed Butt speechless.
No, look, it's just, he's...
Do you want me to fill time?
No. It's fine. Listen, his ambitions to play proactive attacking football, passing football in the Premier League should be absolutely lauded. The problem is, of course, when you can't defend, you're just going to get rinsed. When you play high-risk football like Fulham do, and it's high-risk football for a reason. There's a reason not many teams can do it. Not very few teams can do it to the very, very high level that Barcelona, Bayern Munich do it. Because there's so much that can go wrong. And Fulham are just now, everything is going wrong. But I would stick with Jovanovic purely for two reasons. One is they bought a new central defence, basically, in the summer. You have to give them time to get settled and get comfortable.
Yeah, but they've been rubbish.
No, they have been. But that's what I'm saying.
Chambers got taken off at half-time. Maybe could have been sent off.
I think he was. There was a fitness issue with that. I'm also going to come to his defence.
Oh, I like him as well.
Because I think they're very... They've been okay in attack. They've created third most chances in the league, I believe, but ahead of Liverpool and Spurs. And his defence hasn't been hammered by injuries, but there's been, like, I think Tim Ream only came back recently. Alfie Mawson was out for a bit. Adoy's not been good, so you'd make a case that Ream and Ream was terrible, obviously, at the weekend, but you'd make a case that maybe him and Mawson would be their first choice centre back pairing. He's also had Bryan and Fosu Mensah out. So that's basically their four. And it comes at a time when a lot of those are new signings and a lot of those is trying to bed in.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not helping things by like constantly chopping and changing. I don't think he's...
The team and the formation.
We've compared them to Man City in the past and they are like Man City in the sense that they play a different lineup every week. The difference is they're not doing it effectively. And whereas Guardiola's going about it in a calculated manner... it seems like Jovanovic is scrambling about.
It's because he's got all the new signings.
Last week. What about?
But the thing is, though, I mean, he's clearly a project manager who has a sort of a very distinctive style of play. And in the grand scheme of things, this could just be a blip. Palace recovered from worse last season. Obviously, they did change manager. And if Fulham did change manager, then you'd look at their squad and say they've definitely got enough quality there to stay up, considering the likes of Cardiff and Newcastle. I know Cardiff did just beat them, but I mean, they haven't been particularly convincing.
They are scoring.
However, if they do get rid of him, they're basically just... To guarantee Premier League security, they'll just become like any other sort of like mid-table Premier League side.
They'll lose their identity, and their identity is the best thing. It's a work in progress, right? You need time to to impart your knowledge to your players. Remember Roberto Martinez's Wigan, not so much his Everton, but his Wigan sides. would always be rubbish for like half a season, and then in April, May, suddenly they'd become amazing and they'd survive, and everyone would be like, oh, why is that? And it's because every summer he had to sell like three or four of his best players, they had to restart the whole thing, teach new players his system, get everyone bed in. It's the same, I'm pretty sure this exact same thing is happening right now with Fulham.
It's not exact same, because Fulham became the first newly promoted club ever to spend 100 million.
No, but again, it's they bought
so good, they're not selling good players, they've bought in a lot.
No, it's a similar thing, yeah, okay, they've bought in new players and they've got to get them all up to speed, and they still haven't sorted out their goalkeeping issue. Sergio Rico is really, really good. They need to get him up to speed and get him in there.
Betanelli's in the England squad.
How terrible does he look with the ball at his feet, by the way? I don't understand this call-up, because supposedly it was on the basis that he was good at playing out from the back.
He's been awful, and he's a big problem. It's like when your goalkeeper can't save shots. I mean, look, Man City found this out in 16-17. You can't win games. Like, if your goalkeeper literally just looks so susceptible to everything, then that's a problem. And your defense, every time someone attacks you, you can see the goal. It's like, all this proactive passing football is beautiful, but you have to, your defense has to be solid.
Now, Schürrle needs to stop. I know it was a brilliant goal, but he can't have 14 shots from outside the box every game.
Yeah, well, I mean,
because
that's...
that is, in terms of like all this build-up play, and then someone...
it's just desperation. It's like nothing's working, so they're trying anything.
Yeah, so I feel like that is personally, in attacking ways they are scoring, but they could score more if they didn't.
But I mean, he just needs to settle on his defence, and then I don't think they're going to turn things around instantly. But
no. So do you think Sam Allardyce is going to come in, or do you think they'll keep him?
I think they will. I think they've shown faith with him. He's clearly can deliver. I think it's just a matter of... obviously everyone's projection to finish top half and everything were a bit wild, but I think they will survive because they have enough quality and enough impetus and goal and attack. Like I said, I think they'll do a Wigan. I think they'll struggle, and then it'll all click sometime in the new year, and they'll power their way to safety, and then they can build on that next season because they'll have a really good team.
The only teams that have scored more goals in the bottom half... So from 10th down are Man United in 10th with 15, Leicester in 11th with 14 points, who obviously have a game extra as well. And then everyone else is either 10 or below, and Fulham have 11. So
I think that is one thing going in their favour, is it's really clear what the issue is. And there are individual mistakes.
It's harder to score goals than concede them.
I mean, that's debatable, but... they are individual mistakes, but I think the chopping and changing with the system is sort of conducive for those mistakes. I think we should probably praise Cardiff a little bit here as well, because we have Fulham are one of the teams we do tend to talk about more, and no one's really. I think the last time I was on here, we were talking about how they were pretty much nailed on to go down. Josh Murphy was very, very good. He tore Callum Chambers apart. I'm not 100% sure it was injury that forced him off. That is what I read, but I mean,
yeah, well, it was. He might nearly have been, got like, sent off for a last man challenge, and then was struggling.
And one of the other things that struck me was that if Cardiff they had a striker like Mitrovic, who was really sort of like up against the opposing defenders and occupies them for the whole 90 minutes, then I think they'd be in much better shape.
Well, they've got Callum Patterson, who wins more headers than passes.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah.
Was their number 10?
I don't know if he's got the mean streak.
The game reminded me a little bit of the Europa League final when Atletico Madrid played Atletico Bilbao, and it was like Atletico, everyone was like, Atletico Bilbao are amazing, they're a wonderful attacking side, and then Atleti just shut them down and killed them on the break. And it's sort of like, it was a mini sort of version of that, where Fulham obviously is a great attacking team, but Cardiff just knuckled down and just exploited their weakness.
Well,
very
who else?
Simply,
yeah. They got stuffed by someone else in that.
Like. Also, I think that's like the first time Cardiff have beaten Fulham in like seven or games or so. I mean, they're
impressive. Neil Warnock, as you said, deserves praise for getting the win. But and this is just quickly going back to Arsenal. Arsenal scoring 5 against Fulham isn't as good as everyone.
Yeah, because if Cardiff can score 4, then that's like.
And then I think that's highlighting Fulham's weakness. But someone that is not struggling to win.
Your segues have been on point.
Yeah, so I'm going to skip straight to this point because of that segue. 10 wins out of 10 for PSG, and
ooh,
no one cares exactly.
Well, that's
the first time that's ever happened in Ligue 1, ever.
I mean, it's
37 goals in 10 games.
They're on course to score 140 goals.
Fulham are going to concede as well.
It's the thing where it's like what's Tuchel done? Well, they obviously have improved. They are more lethal than they were before. That's kind of what happens when you have Neymar and Mbappe playing together, and they become more used to each other. You know, they're going to win Liga. They're probably going to win all the cups as well. They'll do a domestic treble again. But like you said, no one will care. And I don't think it's because Liga is a quote unquote farmers league. It's because they are so much better than everyone else. They have so much more money and resources than everyone else. The only other competitor they could have had, Monaco, got ripped to pieces the summer they signed Neymar. Like, they sign Neymar and Mbappe, Monaco get absolutely gouged by everyone that exists. And it's like, oh, yeah, so that's how football... Yeah. So that it would have been fun to watch that Monaco team take on a PSG with Neymar in it. That would have been really fun. But then
Monaco kept Mbappe.
Yeah, no, exactly. If Monaco kept Mbappe and kept, like, Bernardo Silva...
I just mean PSG went, oh...
Yeah,
that 18-year-old that you've got in your team, we'll have him.
They're buying it, basically. They saw a team coming up to threaten them. It's like, all right, we'll have your best player. Thank you very much. And it was, and then they reasserted their dominance. And because they also signed the second best player in the world, and you know, now they're steamrolling them. And they've got a very good coach now as well, who's a really ambitious coach. But ultimately, no one's going to care unless they win the Champions League, which is absurd.
Yeah, that is sort of my. Again, people don't care about PSG, so we won't dwell on them too long, but they're absolutely hammering that just Ligue 1.
To put that in perspective as well, I think there's not a single Ligue 1 game this season in which they've not scored three or more.
Yeah.
And their current total of 37 is, I believe, more than five teams in Ligue 1, two of who got relegated, managed to score in the entirety of last season.
There you go. We would have been excited about that.
I promised a couple.
And he's delivered.
Sad before he came on.
And he's delivered.
And I've left Jake speechless.
Yeah. I'm now just pretending to look at the agenda, trying to scramble where to go next. But that again, that point, Neymar and Mbappe haven't played every single game. Neymar's been directly involved in 11 goals, Mbappe directly involved in 12.
Hmm. And so they scored two at Anfield. That's worth noting as well.
And they played badly to do that.
Yeah, and still lost, but I mean...
So is it... They've got Napoli at home, Ancelotti returning. Is the Champions League...
They need to win, and they need to win big. This is not just about like they have to win. It has to be a statement, because they've had one contested game this season and they lost it 3-2. So they need to not only play, they need to play well, and they need to absolutely hammer Napoli. Because the other thing is, going to the San Paolo is not easy. And so they need some prep, because Paris can get pretty loud when it wants to. What I'm saying is the return is at San Paolo. So if they don't get a win here, they are legitimately in trouble, because their next two games they're going to play Liverpool, and then
they are currently third in the group.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They need to win this game. They need to win it big, because otherwise Liverpool are probably going to get 6 out of 6 of their next two games. Right, you'd figure. Certainly four. Maybe they won't win in Russia, but you know, you figure they'll get at least
Serbia.
Sorry, they'll definitely win at home, and you figure maybe they'll win in Serbia. So Liverpool will be fine. Liverpool are fine, dandy. If they don't beat Napoli and beat them well, it's worrying now, because going to San Paolo is never easy, and they wilted in the Anfield atmosphere. You know, I've not seen Neymar or Cavani is obviously a legend at San Paolo, but I've not seen Neymar or Mbappe play in, like, they didn't do too well at Anfield, did they? So how would they cope with San Paolo? I don't know. So this game at home in Paris, where the crowd can get loud and on their side, is huge. And you know, I mean, for Neymar in particular, who risked everything basically, and you know, Mbappe's 19 years old. He's got so much ahead of him, and he's from Paris as well. So, well, Bondi, but you know, near enough Paris, so fair enough. Neymar risked everything, you know, left the company of the best player in the world to be like, I'm going to make it on my own. And so far, it's been largely a failure. So he really needs to step up and like put on a big performance.
If they did fail to qualify and went into Europa League,
they win the Europa League. Well,
that's basically their season over, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it is.
And how do you motivate? Like,
if you remember last season as well, they were favourites for to win the whole competition.
Yeah, well, they had an incredible
until they drew Real Madrid in the thing, and then I think they were knocked down.
And I remember that game, the first leg in Madrid. They should have won the game. It was watching them. Neymar had again. It was such a weird performance from Neymar, because they clearly couldn't live with him dribbling the ball. But he made so many bad decisions on the ball with the ball at his feet that they didn't actually end up getting and only got the one goal from Rabiot. Like, if he had made better decisions, Neymar on the goal, they could have won that game easily.
Yeah, I certainly think that.
So it's got to be really weird for PSG for Tuchel, because essentially his season, I mean, they've got a difficult group in the Champions League, so it actually has more, but his season comes down to like three or four games in the Champions League. And it's weird that Champions League should even have that much priority, because always you say that the league is the true sign of a team's quality, and they clearly are improving.
Well,
they're proving
that.
Yeah, they're proving. I mean, what I mean is, you can see they're improving, because they're even they're breaking league and records even set by Moneybags PSG, even Zlatan era PSG. They're breaking those records, which is impressive. But because they're so good at home, it's like the only challenge left for them is the Champions League. So they have to do. They have to win it. Really, I mean, at least get to the semis or the finals. And will they do that? I mean.
Well, I think
one more ingredient on that is that
on PSG,
PSG, Napoli. I was going to say last campaign had the ingredients to be a more successful campaign than it was, and if you remember the way they tore Bayern to pieces, I think at the Allianz, I might be wrong in saying that.
No, they beat them in Paris, then lost at the Allianz.
Yeah. But anyway, they beat them 3-0 or something, and that game pretty much got Carlo Ancelotti the sack.
Yeah,
and now he's back for revenge. Back.
So, what do we think the score will be at the Parc des Princes?
You're getting ahead of yourself.
Well, no, I'm going to do it now because it seems like the perfect time to have a quick fire.
I think Champions League round predictions. I think Kylian and Neymar are gonna come to play. I think it's going to be like a 4-1.
Neymar missed their last game.
I think it's going to be like a big. I think they're 4-1.
4-1.
I think they're
going to
smack.
Wow. Blimey, as Thierry would say.
this is the hardest one to predict, I think, of all the Champions League games this week. Because Napoli have kept a few clean sheets on the bounce now, I believe.
Yeah, and they've only scored one in two games and not conceded any.
And the game against Liverpool didn't reveal, but it sort of highlighted just how well they are at minimising, how good they are at minimising chances for
and
high profile opposition.
And how good Kalidou Koulibaly is.
Yeah, exactly. So I think PSG will just about win because it's a home game, and I think just 1-0 PSG.
1-0, cool. So, as I said, this is the best time to do a then quick fight of the Champions League. Ronaldo returns to Old Trafford, ban uplifted.
I think
Man United, Juventus.
I think his ban was it just?
Sorry, uplifted. It was reduced.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious what's going to happen, isn't it? He's going to score. Juventus will go 1-0 up. Man United come back and win.
You think Man United will win?
That's been the pattern, isn't it? In the last few games, they drew
against Chelsea.
Well, that's a good point. Well, no, I do think he'll score. He always scores at Old Trafford, Cristiano. I imagine he'll score. Juve will obviously be the better team. I just think United might they've just got some sort of weird mojo going on right now. I think they'll pull it out. Maybe a draw. Let's say 1-1. They'll go one
you
down.
Said win
and come
first.
Yeah, well, change your mind.
Man United's best performances this season have come against better teams. I think you could even we said this last time. You could make a case that half versus Spurs, the first half was their best half of a game this season. But I think Juventus, although they've only dropped a couple of points in Serie A.
Dropped a couple. They were 9 out of 9.
Yeah, but they still don't look very convincing.
8 out of 8.
And
sorry.
It's even being suggested by some that Bonucci's become a little bit of a weak link for them. I think someone put together a compilation of the 5 goals they've conceded this season. 4 of them came from mistakes by Bonucci. So they don't look as rock solid as Juventus traditionally have been in recent campaigns. Having said all that, I'm going to go against it because I just think they've got that Champions League savviness about them. Yeah. I think it would be like a sort of a 2-0 win, like the Spurs game where Man United actually play well but just get picked off on the break because they do just make too many mistakes.
Dybala fresh off a hay in the last round. Mm.
I think they just make too many individual errors, and Juventus are a team that, especially in the Champions League, they're very good at punishing them.
Borussia Dortmund, Atletico Madrid is the next we have on the list. Borussia Dortmund, top of Bundesliga, scored the most goals. Sancho and Alcacer have not scored when they've hit the target this season.
Paco and Jaden, mate, I love it. They should both grow moustaches and like and get haircuts like the Sabotage video from the Beastie Boys.
I thought you were going to say like me then.
Like you, mate. I just thought
you were going to hype me up.
They need to get some aviators, grow some moustaches and just be like the dressed like the guys from the Sabotage video from Beastie Boys. No, I love it. Paco and Jaden, they're fantastic. They're wonderful. But Atletico Madrid are going to chew them up and spit them out.
Is it in Dortmund?
Yeah, no, I know it is. I think it'll be 0-0 or 1-0 to Atletico. I think the defence, Atletico, this is what Simeone.
I love how chew them up and spit them out, 0-0.
Yeah, but that's
no, I know it is. But people will be like 4-0 and it's like, no, Atletico.
But they'll do it in a very Atletico Madrid way. It will be.
I think they'll stifle the space. I think it's Jan Oblak, so I think poor Paco and Jaden are going to have shots on target that won't go in. Poor guys.
That's a great show.
Going to ruin their stat, their records. I love Dortmund. I'd love it if they smashed that Atletico Madrid just because they're so much fun to watch, even though I love La Liga sides.
Dortmund in the Bundesliga, highest conversion rate at like 25%, highest shot accuracy at about 55%.
Yeah.
It's going to stop soon. Yeah. Mark, and Oblak might be the wall that breaks. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think it will stop at the rate they're going. But I think the team has a sort of a core that has legs, despite the fact that their central defensive partnership is like a 23-year-old and a 19-year-old at the moment.
Akanji's very good, though. He's very good.
Zagadou and Diallo have been switching up. But Axel Witsel looks really good.
Signing of the season. Jinx.
According to Roberto Martinez, who has to say that because he's his manager at international level with Belgium.
What's the score going to be?
Marco Reus bang in form as well. Yeah. But I'm going to continue my trend of just praising one team and then completely flipping the script at the last minute. And I do agree with Mo. I think they're too street smart and it's going to be a 1-0 Atletico Madrid win.
I do want to shout out Zorc though, the Dortmund chief executive, because it's almost like he saw this group coming, because his two signings in the summer were two midfield hard men, Axel Witsel and Delaney, who wouldn't look out of place playing for Atletico Madrid. I was like, yeah, he saw this coming, didn't he? He's like, he's signed some protectors for his little children.
There you go. Next game on the list. Pardon me, that was a weird thing with my voice there. Barcelona Inter, Messi-less Barcelona. Well, against potentially Nangolan-less.
Well, the last time Barcelona lost Lionel Messi to injury and had to play Inter Milan, they beat him 2-0. So
Mo's going 2-0. Will?
I'm going 2-0. I think this is going to happen. I think they will rally. I think Ousmane Dembele will. It drew a lot of criticism, especially for his last 15 minutes against Sevilla, which was just really weird and lazy, and he had the ball away a bunch. But earlier he played well. Should have created a goal for Rakitic. Rakitic missed a sitter. Quite a few chances for Suarez. I think he'll play well, I think he'll win 2-0. I think Suarez might score.
Any one sentence prediction?
Yeah, 2-1, because Barcelona can't keep clean sheets at the moment.
And Mauro Icardi.
But I do think they'll win. Yeah.
Icardi, 4 touches, 5 goals probably. No, not that many. The last quickfire prediction Champions League this week that we want to look at is PSV instead of PSG versus Spurs. And PSV Eindhoven score so many goals in the Eredivisie.
Mm. And they've got a perfect record. 9 wins in 9.
I think...
It's all the...
That's 9 wins in 9 and 36 goals, I think. So just one fewer than PSG.
With one game less.
Yeah. I think PSV... Spurs will dominate. Spurs will play well. Eriksen's back. But I think it'll be either a PSV win or a very high score draw, like 2-2. Like I think it's not easy to play in Eindhoven. As much as you think, oh, PSV aren't that good. They're good at home.
Ask Germany about Erving Lozano's pace as well.
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, that's
fresh off 2 assists and a goal this week.
It's going to be it's going to be interesting for watching either Ben Davies or Trips try and contain him. I think Spurs will play very well, but I think score draw. I think 2-2 maybe.
Will, final one.
Based primarily on the fact that all my other predictions have been pretty tame, I'm going to go 1-0 PSV.
Ooh.
Upset.
Blimey.
A relative upset.
A relative upset in the Champions League, courtesy of PSV rather than PSG. The final section of today's podcast, which we've done a bit of an inversion because it just flowed so nicely, but we're going to take a little...
You can't resist a segue.
I can't resist it. But I think it was fair to do it that way. And now we can just spend final 10 minutes talking about La Liga being the league to watch right now. Diego Simeone, after this weekend, said, La Liga is extraordinary, fantastic. All the teams fight and battle when it allows for a much more competitive league than when Ronaldo and Messi defined it.
I mean, yeah.
3 points separate first and sixth.
I mean, it is a more competitive league because obviously Real Madrid don't have their 50-goal-a-season striker and Barcelona are managed by a coward. So, you know, it sort of balances
them in hell.
It sort of balances things out. No, that's obviously too harsh. Ernesto Valverde, the reason I'm critical of him now as Barcelona coach is because he did such a great job last season. Last season, Barca had no right to win La Liga. They had massive talent deficiencies.
You criticised him last season as well, though.
Not that much. Only after the Roma debacle. You called him a coward last season. Yeah, after the Roma debacle. But apart from the Roma debacle, for most of last season, Barcelona's third best attacking player was Paulinho. And their second best player was Luis Suarez, who didn't even start playing well until January. So that team had no right to win La Liga. It was, Stegen had a miracle season. Messi had a typical great season. And Valverde's organizational effects was brilliant. And a team with massive talent deficiencies won La Liga almost without losing a game, which is incredible. So he deserves huge props for that. But he was so good as Barcelona coach last season, he's almost now unqualified to coach Barca now, because now Barca have Dembele and Coutinho and Malcolm, this incredible attacking talent.
Oh, but Malcolm's still there, is he?
Apparently so, yes. Like, I do believe so. I haven't seen him. You know, the only pictures we have in Getty are from preseason, but, you know.
Probably in the middle.
They say he's there somewhere. I'm going to believe them. And it's like, now that they have this talent and they need to use it and play expansive football and maybe not play Luis Suarez every single goddamn game, he's not doing it. You know, they sold Lucas Digne because they had this left back, young left back Juan Miranda in the B team, who's very, very good, teenager, and they're not playing him. You know, they've got, you know, it's just, Valverde is very risk averse, and that's a problem for Barca, and that's holding them back.
Well, but he's risk averse, but their defensive record's been quite poor recently, but they've been scoring enough goals to take them to the top of the table.
Yeah, no. The reason he's risk averse is because he tries to, like, for example, the reason he doesn't use Dembele a lot is because Dembele, quote unquote, gives the ball away. But the fact is, he started the season playing a 4-3 with Philippe Coutinho in central midfield, which is just absolutely ridiculous when Lionel Messi's playing in the front three on the right. Because what happens is Messi goes infield on the right because he's the number 10. Coutinho goes forward because he's not really a central midfielder. And Rakitic goes right to cover Messi defensively, which means that Busquets is basically standing in midfield by himself. And therefore, your team is going to get rinsed on the break by counterattacks, which is what's happened to Barcelona. They look vulnerable to breaks, which is why he brought in Arthur, reverted to the 4-4-1-1, and now they're a bit more solid. And now his only real problem is just the lack of adventure with the forwards.
The biggest test that will be sort of, coming the coward's way, is this will be the first El Clasico without Messi because of his broken arm and Ronaldo now at Juventus since December 2007.
Which Barcelona also lost 1-0 at the Camp Nou after losing Lionel Messi to injury the week before the game. So that's not good.
The omens aren't good. Also,
for this season, most take-ons completed for Barcelona, most chances created, most shots on target, most through balls, most goals scored, most assists.
Mr. Everything, Mr. Classic Material,
Is that the equaliser Lopetegui needed?
Yeah.
I was saying this to Mo before, it'll give us an interesting glimpse into life without Lionel Messi for Barcelona. I think also that if Real Madrid win this, and this puts into perspective what exactly Diego Simeone is saying there and how like crazy it is in the league at the moment, if they win this, they go within a point of Barcelona, despite the fact that under Lopetegui they've recorded, I think, their worst start to a La Liga season since 2003.
Yeah.
And they themselves are only 4 points...
2001-2.
Four points start. Ahead of Valencia, who were challenging for the title last season, who have won just one time this season, drawn seven games.
Yeah, it's
do you remember when I did that Valencia stat and you said it wasn't exciting?
La Liga.
Well,
you
needed to leave it in the oven a little bit longer.
Because if you're looking at last season, last season Barcelona would have won against Girona, would have won against Leganes, would have won against Athletic Club, and that would have been what? Five extra points, and then they would have been clear top of the league, and they would have been like, okay, there's a massive advantage there, obviously. But because they dropped that, they had that really weird week because Piqué shaved his beard. And
Messi shaved his.
No, but it was mainly because they conceded five goals in that week against Girona, Leganes, and Athletic Club, and literally all the goals were Piqué's fault. Every single one of them. He shaved his beard.
He's had a poor season.
No, but he's grown his beard back. He's looking all right now. He's playing, defending well. It's all about the beard. I'm sorry. It just is. But look, enough about Barcelona. Let's talk about the real heroes of...
Before you do your own segues... who will Barcelona be relying on now for this to get a result in El Clasico?
Coutinho looks really influential now.
Why
would I be happy for him?
Coutinho has settled in very, very well.
Answer I was expecting was Marc-Andre ter Stegen.
I mean, ter Stegen their defence will need, and the guy pulled off two double saves, two amazing double saves in the game. He helped him get the win, basically. He made the save, they went to their end and scored a goal. The key players, obviously Busquets is going to be important, Piqué is going to be important, but the guy to get them the win, I think you're looking at Dembele and Coutinho. They have to step up, and this is going to be the same against Inter in the Champions League, which is coming up before the Clásico as well. Suárez is obviously going to be the figurehead because he's the senior guy now, but he's going to run himself into the ground after like 60 minutes in both games, probably even earlier. It's going to be up to Dembele and Coutinho to really step up, control the ball, provide the creativity and the threat. I think they'll be able to do it because, weirdly enough, losing Messi, I mean, obviously he's the best player in the world and he's their everything, but they can actually put out a very well-balanced, talented team without him because they have these two guys, Coutinho and Dembele, either side of Luis Suarez. They can play a solid midfield through Rakitic, Arthur and Busquets. I mean, Rakitic has been playing terribly right now, but essentially
scoring
bangers,
bloody gorgeous goals,
bangers, but not playing well. I mean, I imagine he might even do that in one of the two games, to be honest, like not play well and score a banger.
I'm predicting that Ter Stegen is going to make at least 8 saves in the El Clasico.
I wouldn't
which
be surprised,
which is high, but I think it will happen.
How many was it against Sevilla at the weekend?
It was only 5. Four in.
I think the most striking thing, obviously, was the quality.
The quality.
Yeah, he made 12 in 2016-17, the end of that season. So yeah. He's done it before against Madrid. I think he'll do it again.
Better than Oblak.
This is what I was going to say. There's a genuine case to be made that like the La Liga season is currently being defined by goalkeepers, because I don't know if we have time to come on to Alaves.
No, we'll touch on the miracle workers.
But Fernando Pacheco was very good against Celta Vigo at the weekend, and pretty much, as Mo would say, the reason they won.
Yeah.
Now people are calling for Spain squad.
I mean, it's look, De Gea, this is the funny thing, is obviously last season De Gea had his miracle season.
I don't mean to replace
him. No, I know. I'm just saying, now if you look at it, he's comfortably not, because he's not playing well this season, De Gea, and Neuer's not really back at his best. I think the two best goalies, and Courtois is not settled into Madrid life, not settled back into Madrid life very well. He'll improve, obviously, he's very good. But the two best goalies in the world right now, by a distance, are Oblak and Ter Stegen. Like, they're both performing absolutely wonderfully.
We wouldn't be able to mention Jan Oblak without saying he's kept more clean sheets in La Liga.
125 games, 72 conceded goals, 73 clean sheets.
Is Simeone.
Oh yeah, no.
Of those are Simeone's.
This
is the thing. You're saying who's better? Is it him or is it Ter Stegen? Ter Stegen plays in a system that exposes him massively, and it's the same thing I've always said about Piqué. What makes him so great and underappreciated is when you play attacking football, your defenders and goalkeeper are so exposed. Oblak is phenomenal and performs better in that sense, but he's obviously plays in a defensive system which protects him.
But what I would then argue is that if you're getting absolutely peppered,
it's the Fabianski
syndrome.
They do say the hallmark of a good goalkeeper is one.
So that's why I'd say Oblak.
But what I would then say is look at the line of goalkeepers that Atletico Madrid. Yeah. Is it a coincidence or is it just the fact that their system is like most?
I would say
class goalkeepers.
I would say
they've got an absolutely incredible goalkeeper coach.
You could argue for either one of them. I think honestly is the honest truth. I think if you said Oblak, I would not argue against you. If you said Stegen, I would not argue against you. I think there's no.
Here are the last 6 winners of the Zamora Trophy, which is the Golden Glove.
Check this out.
12-13 Courtois Atletico, 13-14 Courtois Atletico, 14-15 Claudio Bravo Barcelona, and then Jan Oblak 3 on the row.
Although last season hilariously was going to be Ter Stegen, and then he played against Levante, conceded 5 goals and lost to Zamora, which is very funny.
He's not the best.
No, exactly. There
so
you go.
The final point and what we'll end on is another reason why La Liga is being considered one of the most exciting is because the top 6 at the moment is completely, no one knows the teams in there, or it just looks completely different. It's never looked like this before. And Alaves, we've mentioned, who I was looking at their statistics last night, and I know everything isn't about that, but I can't get my head around how they are third.
But they've been so consistent. It's like I was reading a Sid Lowe piece, and which brought my attention to the stat. Only Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid and Barcelona have won more points than them.
Abelardo's doing really, really well.
So in a La Liga where everyone's sort of losing their mind, it's like actually one of the sanest things that a consistent team like Alaves.
They're just gritty enough and talented enough and plucky enough and organised.
This is the thing. So I know some of these people won't consider being a hallmark of winning games, but they've completed the 19th fewest passes, 1,849. Yeah. They've conceded the 17th least, or they're 17th for chance creation, 62, They don't play any crosses, which I thought they were going to be really high on if they were doing well. Scored 12 goals, which is not, is equal seventh, which is for where they are. 14th shots on target, 30. 13th for shots, 16th for shots inside the area. Their expected goals is the second worst in the league.
They're just finding a way.
Well organised. I mean, they're
kind of, their expected goals against is 13th.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not going to end up in the Champions League spots, but
I tell you who might though. I think we need to. They lost the weekend, but Sevilla. I think we can't discount Sevilla. I think they look really, really good under Pablo Machi, and this 3-5-2 set formation really works for them. Their defenders are great. Their forwards are really good. I mean, Barca, Pique kind of bottled them up at the weekend, but Andre Silva, Vicente Banega, both of them having really good seasons. Ever Banega, look, once they.
Oh.
Ever Banega is just
incredible.
Phenomenal player. Had to play a reduced role at the weekend, still had an influence on the game. Pablo Sarabia is just magnificent to watch. I think they are, Sevilla are really special. And honestly, if Barca don't pick up like some the pace, which honestly, if he's playing Suarez up front, I don't think they will ever really get a sort of genuine consistency this season. I would not. We're talking about Atletico Madrid. I think Sevilla are a genuine shout for La Liga this season. Same as 06-07, if you remember that season. They were probably the best team in the world at the time. Should have really won the league. Kind of threw it away at the end.
Is this peak Canute or Fabiano?
Canute, Fabiano, Jesus Navas right wing. Jesus Navas is back at the club. They had Dani Alves right back, Adriano left back. That was they had Enzo Maresca in midfield. If you remember him, they were really really good side, really attacking team, and they were magnificent to watch. So, they should have won the league. So I think
what do you reckon to Espanyol though at the moment? Because obviously they were the team that.
I think they're very good. I think Rubi is a really fantastic coach. He was assistant manager at Barcelona in 12-13. They brought him in prior to that season, and I always assumed it was because they figured Tito Villanova might get ill again, and they needed to give the job to someone else who would be integrated in the system. And when Tito did get ill, surprisingly enough, they made Jordi Rua assistant coach take over, and it was just like Tito was managing the team remotely, which I thought was a weird decision. I thought if they had just said, okay, Tito, you need a year out, leave it, and then Ruby can manage the team, I thought they actually would have done much better than they did. They wouldn't have got spanked 7-0 by Bayern Munich.
Well, they wouldn't have, because Espanyol have the highest expected goals against.
Yeah, they're very
0.7.
They're very well organized,
and they've only conceded 7, so they're living up to their incredible defense.
Ruby is a very very good coach, very good organizer, very good at set pieces. I think Espanyol are, unlike
to
Alaves,
round off,
who I think they're going to fall off. Espanyol
are second,
yeah,
and perhaps so we're saying more deserving so of that spot based on what some of the numbers say. The top seven, there's 4 points between Barcelona and Real Madrid, first and seventh, and at the moment it goes Barcelona, Espanyol, Alaves, Sevilla, Atletico Madrid, Real Valladolid,
and then Ronaldo's Real Valladolid.
Exactly. So, what's the top four at the end of the season? Who wins the league? And
I
then,
thought you were just going to ask us who wins the league.
I think Barca will probably just pull it out because Messi will come back.
Because they've got a cowardly manager.
Well, yeah, no, they've got Messi, who's a human cheat code. I mean, in all of La Liga, they've only felt, since he's been at his peak, they've only failed to win it 3 times. And 2 of those times, cool, they should have won it anyway. So
Barcelona number one.
Barcelona number one.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I'm sort of in two minds as to whether Atletico Madrid will just sort of turn it on and grind out enough results.
I'm still backing Atletico Madrid.
So Barca number one, Atletico Madrid number two, I think, and then Sevilla three. And Madrid will finish fourth. They'll stick with Lopetegui, then they'll sack him, and then they'll pick up enough points to finish fourth. But I think Sevilla cannot be discounted. I think I think they're just going to focus on the league. I think they'll really really do well.
Will?
Yeah, I think Barca. Yeah, yeah.
So you, what Mo said. Same.
Madrid have real problems.
Well,
it's not just Lopetegui.
When Real Madrid get Jose Mourinho back in the saddle,
I mean, it's the thing with Madrid is it's not just Lopetegui.
I shouldn't have said that.
They've got
that's
an old
teasing.
Team.
That's going to lead us into even more talk. But it is interesting, and anyone that is listening to this and wants to read more, we will have an article about Real Madrid managers. So find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and read it. But for today, that is all we do have time for. So thank you for taking the journey around the agenda with me, Mohamed Butt.
I love that little catchphrase. Take the journey around the agenda.
Well, it's because I changed the whole order of the whole thing.
Well, I mean, it worked and I enjoyed it. It was a good time, good conversation, and, just good stuff.
Great times. Did you have great times as well, Will?
Thank you for guiding us around the agenda.
That is my one role. And until next week, when I guide all Squawker Talker listeners for an hour of their day, thank you very much for listening.